day and welcome to the food scene on heritageradionetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Carlin Turkel. Here today, joined by Ari Form and Matt DeVrent of the Jaquah. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1965, the Hearst Ranch has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands at Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more info, go to HearstRanch.com. So as I mentioned, Matt and Ari from the Jaquah, thank you for being on.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about a couple little terminology things. I love going to the Jaquah, a fantastic little bar in, is that Carroll Gardens or Cobble Hill?
It's right on the border, so either.
Yeah, you're a brinker.
As with all of those neighborhoods go, I think. You can say whatever you want.
The Bococa.
Sure, exactly.
Yeah.
I also wanted to shout out to Damon Bolte, who had Ari on a recent episode, so you could hear about Ari's past life at Cluck U Chicken.
Pluck you, dude.
Pluck you. But that's a whole other story.
Get it straight.
So today we're going to talk a little about terminology, because I love going to the Jaquah and sometimes just reading the list. I mean, I love drinking through the list as well, but the cocktails are always so playful and humorous, and that's just not the, you know, flavor profile and the things that go into it, the actual names of the cocktails. And I have a list of a whole bunch of them now. But one of my favorites right now are the Ray Finkel and Louis Einhorn, who any Ace Ventura fan would know as the double-faced person that is,
The villain.
The villain, yeah.
Yes.
I was trying to figure out what her name was in my head.
Sean Young.
Sean Young, that's it. Fantastic.
She was also in Dune.
I don't think I've ever seen Dune.
Oh, well, that would explain why why your favorite cocktail isn't the Baron Harkonnen.
Well,
a Dune reference.
That's what we're going to go through, actually. That's why I never drank that one. Like, yeah, I don't even understand what the heck that is.
It's named after the color of his sores.
Really?
Sort of. I mean, the character.
Okay.
And so then also the color.
We're going to get a little more in-depth on how you go about naming these things. After we just talk a second about, I think there's been this shift between the idea of bartender to mixologist, and one of the big things is actually just knowing your shit. Knowing etymology and knowing where drinks come from. Bartenders, sit there and pull a tap and give you a beer or pour a wine, but aren't necessarily as versed in the lineage of a drink. And you guys know your stuff. I mean, it's not like you're sitting there pouring Velvet Falernum because it sounds cool. But, I mean, maybe you are. I mean, I would.
Well, partially.
Yeah. So what do you think, is the biggest difference between being a bartender and being a mixologist?
I think it comes down to attitude, maybe. It's difficult because I think some people will take the word mixologist and think of it positively, and some people will think of it negatively, and it's really how one who identifies themselves as a mixologist, how they present themselves to the public. You call yourself a mixologist because you're really interested in making interesting drinks and coming up with balanced drinks. Cool, call yourself whatever you want. But if your focus is to show off these drinks that you've made and with blinders on and not really care about your customer or about what anybody else is doing, then you're just a douche.
Yeah. That's that flair stuff where they flip the bottles around.
Well, that's fine as long as you have humility.
Yeah.
Right. I think a lot of times the mixology tag, we at least, I think, tend to step away from that a little bit. I would say we sort of embrace the reputation of being kind of the redheaded stepchild of the whole mixology world. Like, where the cocktail names are, I think, a reflection of that. We're not necessarily into being seen, I would say, at least, I'll speak for Ari, but I think we see ourselves as bartenders more than mixologists.
Agreed.
We happen to like making mixed drinks that are complex and do use fresh ingredients and all of those things, but I would say we're in the bartender world a little bit more than mixologists, but the typical definition is probably just that. The type of drinks we make are usually connected to people that consider themselves mixologists.
Yeah. Actually, another reference to Damon's show, Speakeasy, that Ari was recently on, you mentioned something of the sort that it's also how you command a bar and how you, you know, talk to people and create a rapport rather than just sitting there being like, this isn't a drink. You're keeping everybody happy at the same time and being chummy, being friendly, and not just making a drink.
Right, exactly. When you're a bartender, like Matthew and I consider ourselves, you control an environment. You are in charge of an environment. That's where you're getting paid to do. That's where you're getting tipped for, is to make people feel comfortable and have a really nice time where they are having a drink. And if that drink is really well made, that's just it's a bonus.
Yeah. And the drinks are fantastically made at the Jakewalk. I kind of just wanted to break down the list before jumping into the actual, you know, titular names of these things and the inspiration behind it. And how did you go about forming your cocktail list?
Well, it's, you mean just in general? It's pretty, yeah. We like to just, as a skeleton, have four shaken and four stirred, have eight cocktails all the time. Plus our signature drink, the Jakewalk, and a guest cocktail, which we have every list from another bar or something. But aside from those two, we always have four shaken, four stirred, and then we just kind of have it seasonally focused. Not just in the sense of the freshness of ingredients, let's say, but in, you know, in the winter, they're going to be a little bit boozier, a little bit heavier, and then in the summer, you're going to have drinks that are a little more refreshing.
Yeah. Let's talk about spring, because that's all I'm thinking about lately.
Nice.
What kind of spirits, what kind of flavors and profiles are you looking for then?
I would say you can stick to, in general, you always have to have, the list isn't just for shaken and for stirred. I feel a need to define shaken and stirred for some people that might not
Please.
Know.
Yeah.
Shaken is usually juice, any sort of citrus, well, almost always citrus, at least at our bar. And you shake those drinks. And the drinks that are all booze, it gets stirred so that your right. Manhattan doesn't come out cloudy. If you stir it, it comes out clear and pretty and reflecting yeah. all the lights from the bar.
Wait, why would it become cloudy if shaken?
Oh, you're introducing all those bubbles in there and the shards of ice, and it just clouds it. It clouds the clarity of the liquid.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. It's a purely aesthetic thing. It's not a functional thing at all.
Yeah.
I think you generally could probably shake something and get it colder faster. Not more cold, but...
Yeah.
But
it does taste more delicious.
Yeah. it just looks better. It's a whole thing.
Yeah. So shaken, stirred, signature, guest, and then maybe some other little seasonal highlights on top
right.
of that.
Yeah. Like in the spring or the summer, you're going to see more muddling.
Yeah.
In
define.
In the process. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Define muddling.
Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah. It's when you take a big stick and you push it into savory
Wait,
ingredients.
Wait, I was going to stop you. I'm like, define muddling.
I said muddling.
Yeah. So that's something that happens more so during the fresher, you know, weather months.
Yeah, right.
So spring, summer. But you don't see many muddled drinks during your winter cocktail list?
Not as many.
Yeah.
But we have one on now that has muddled cucumber, but it's with it's our guest cocktail. From a Huckleberry bar. It's called the Faith and Fortitude, but it has along with it some heavier ingredients. It has Laphroaig, Isla Scotch, and it has the Velvet Falernum that you were talking about. So it's a big drink.
Yeah, I don't even know what Velvet Falernum really is. I just like the name.
Okay.
Yeah, that and Bativia Arrak in my head are like two really good friends that hang out and like have adventures. If yeah, there was ever an animated spirit series,
they should be friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Muddled. Are there any other types of drinks that you try to introduce to your list during other seasons? So we have shaken, we have stirred, we have the one with the big stick.
Oh, I see what you mean. Like another category?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess we tend to, because we have a limited list, you know, like we're not one of those places that has 35 cocktails all at once. During the winter, maybe, is when you incorporate cream drinks and or egg drinks.
Yeah.
Which are still shaken, generally. But they sort of fit into their own category because it's a whole different texture. I guess texture comes into play a lot more with those drinks than it does in another one.
And is an egg drink considered a flip, or is it like the square and rhombus thing where all flips are egg drinks, but not all egg drinks are flips?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, you hit it.
Exactly. A flip is just the alcohol in an egg that you kind of, don't know, maybe it's called that because you flip them together or something. I'm not sure of the etymology of the word. But then you have, but then you have like fizzes, which will have egg white and soda in it. And then there's variations on that where the word gold comes up in the title and sort of implies that you're using a whole egg instead of just the white of the egg.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah, yolk. Okay, I got that. Yeah,
exactly.
Sours too. I mean, that in my head, just because I think sour mix is the first time I thought I had a mixed drink, all I did was drink sour mix.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
Sour mix?
Yeah.
Nothing else with it?
I didn't know.
Oh, okay.
Did you have that on the rocks or straight up?
I think I had it straight up. It was cold though. I think I shook it and it was cold.
Yeah.
As you said, it was disgusting. I actually thought it was pretty good.
Well, you were probably like 11 and it tastes like Mountain Dew or something.
Yeah. I think I was like 15. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
I loved like Sour Patch Kids and all that kind of stuff. So I'm like, oh my God, liquid form and it's boozy.
Right.
And I felt like I had to puke afterwards. Yeah. So I thought there was alcohol in it, but it was just sour mix. So there are sours. Royales? I'm not even sure what those are.
Royales is just anything that involves, I guess, sparkling wine or champagne.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be champagne traditionally, but that's too expensive. So
yeah.
Just white wine. Or just wine with bubbles added.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Excellent. So just take a straw and blow into it.
Right.
Royale.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly.
Any other types of cocktails that you guys try to serve at the Jaquois?
That's tough because I don't know if we try to cover the bases as much there. It's more of a, an inspiration of the season, or maybe most cocktails are actually based on something else before it. So, I made a variation on a margarita or whatever, and I put champagne on top. So now it's a Royale, but we didn't set out to make a Royale in the first place.
And even still, with all these titles, Royale, Fizz, Sour, they all derive from a drink that is shaken or a drink that is stirred.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's what it all comes down to.
So it's like the family tree of cocktails.
Exactly. There's this process of making these cocktails, and then they are separated into their own categories based on ingredients.
Yeah.
So not styles of production. You know what I mean?
Excellent. We're going to take a quick break and actually come back to the cocktails themselves and the difference between a Finkel and an Einhorn. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. We'll be right back.
Service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Join Linda Palacio for A Taste of the Past every Thursday at 12 p.m. as she indulges her curiosities about food, cooking, drinking, and dining of the past by taking a journey through culinary history. Linda interviews authors, scholars, friends, and chroniclers to learn about what was eaten, where, and how, from as long ago as ancient Mesopotamia and Rome, right up to the grazing tables and deli counters of today. The show underscores food as a lively link between present and past cultures. Again, that's Thursday at 12 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
And welcome back to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with Ari Form and Matt DeVrent of The Jaquois, a fantastic little cocktail bar in the Boca Cove, Cara Garden, Cobble Hill area.
Boca-ca. Yeah, for carol, I'm guessing.
Yeah, boca. Yeah, jeez.
No, it's cobble, carol, so coca.
What about Borm? Yeah, what about Borm? That doesn't... Bo. Oh, okay. Whatever. It's on Smith Street.
This is why we don't refer it to it as
Soho
that.
Means south of Houston.
What does NoHo mean?
Let's just do this for the rest of the show, actually.
Yeah.
I think that's better.
We were just talking about... kind of the family tree of cocktails, shaken and stirred, and then, you know, royales, fizzes, etc. therewith. A word that Matt used, I think it was like variances on cocktails, or like...
I'm sure that sounds better than any word I used, but great.
I think it was a V word. But, you know, that you are deriving your cocktail list from other cocktails, that there is some basis and foundation for how you make a drink. And I kind of want to just dive into some of these names. One that I didn't know, the Baron Harkonnen. a reference to Dune, I've heard.
Yes, Baron Harkonnen is the... he's a villain in the first Dune book and the also the David Lynch movie.
Probably the most famous villain from the movie. I guess that's up for debate.
Yeah, I mean, the Sting. Sting's pretty famous.
Yeah, that's true.
Myrto, Bronca, Menta, Grenadine, Lime Juice... Shaken, so
and
it's
rye.
And rye, of course, 2 ounces of it. Shake, I'm reading the list, $11. shake, so it's a shaken drink, and strain into ice-filled highball glass, topped with soda, maraschino cherry garnish. Now, it's a shaken drink, but what kind of drink is it? Or what was it derived from?
Mm. I mean, it's like a Collins, basically. It's a it's got your liquor... your citrus, and then your sweetener, and those and then topped with soda, right? Making it essentially like a Collins. And then there's several, you know, you split all those ideas into several different ingredients, but with the goal being to balance all of your flavors somehow. But I think it's born out of a Collins.
Yeah, sure. I gotta say, I don't know which came first, the name or the ingredients or us having too much Bronca Menta in the house and deciding we need to make a drink with it. Yeah. Or like, I'm not really sure.
So
what
you guys
started.
Have a chicken egg thing going on.
Exactly.
Right.
We didn't sit there. So. Right. Exactly. We didn't sit there and be like, okay, what Collins variation are we gonna have this time around? We were like, this drink tastes really good.
Yeah.
And then why Dune?
Well, the drink has a has a very. It has the grenadine and the Myrto and the Bronca Menta all are red, dark red, tending towards black in color. The rye is brown. And then you add the soda, which is obviously clear. And the drink comes out with this really interesting sort of very blood red all the way up to clear color spectrum in the glass. And then you have the maraschino cherry, the authentic ones, which are also dark in color. And Baron Harkonnen, notoriously...
this is where it gets a little weird.
Yeah.
And metaphorically is covered in sores in the movie, and which he, or all of the his sycophants who surround him compliment him on, and he's constantly having them cleansed or expanded for, you know, whatever level of meanness he wants to... or the director wants him to portray. So it was more of a likeness naming.
Yeah.
The color of drink reminds us of the Baron's sores.
Yeah. So Baron Harkonnen is a much better name than calling it the Baron's sores.
Right.
Yes, or the Baron Collins.
Yeah.
Right. Or for us, like any other name, you know, the more obscure, the better. We just like it that way. So, like... it very easily could be the Maroon 5 or something stupid that we would hate.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We're like, no, Baron Harkonnen, that's better.
I think that, basically what it comes down to is you have the chance to name a cocktail, and it's gonna have that name forever. And I think Maddie and I's personalities would rather watch the person look at the menu and see them laugh or be confused as opposed to them being like, oh, what a wonderfully esoteric and punny name. Oh, that's, you know, that's etymologically correct, that name. No, it's much better when somebody's like, hey, they called that one the Enrico Palazzo. Did anybody see Naked Gun?
Do you have an Enrico Palazzo?
We did last time.
Yeah.
Awesome. Violent Bear.
That one was not named by us. It was named by Jeremy, our head bartender.
Jeremy Swift.
Yes, and that is probably some snobby literary reference that we just don't understand.
generally, yeah, so the three heads all go together, and Jeremy has some very respectful and appropriate things that make perfect sense.
There's always like a Latin word in there.
And then Ari and I go, yeah, but what about an athlete?
Yeah.
Or what about
do you not know like early 80s basketball? What the hell?
Oh, speaking of which, like I love those references. I think you guys had a World Be Free, right?
Yes. We did.
We've
had also Lafayette Fat Lever.
Which I'm a huge Fat Lever when he was on the Mavs. What other sports athletes?
We have Rory Sparrow on this.
To keep it with basketball.
Yeah, I actually didn't know who Rory Sparrow was.
He's a bit of a journeyman, I think.
I'm a big Knicks fan, so he means a lot to me. Early 80s backup point guard for the Knicks. I think he backed up Darryl Walker.
Yeah.
More importantly, he scored the first points in Miami Heat history.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Not really, but that's what makes it fitting for us.
Other athletes that you either have named drinks for or hope to?
Yeah, we ventured into baseball a little bit. Actually, this one was one of the servers at our bar. Her
that's
dad
right.
saw the first list that we... For a while, we were trying to go with classic cocktails, classic names, and after a while, we just realized it just doesn't fit our personalities, and we're not putting out what we would like people to think of us. And I guess we think of ourselves as a wackadoo of some sort. I don't know.
So this name is perfect.
Good and she showed the menu to her dad, and he goes, why don't they go with a three-fingered brown? And I'm like, who the hell's three-fingered
Mordecai.
Brown?
Mordecai.
Yeah, Mordecai.
Exactly. I didn't know this.
And it's perfect because the drink is three fingers of brown. Like that's how big it is. It's three fingers high.
Awesome. Yeah,
and it's brown, and it's boozy, and it's a wonderful name. And Maddie actually sent home a three-finger brown with our server to give to her dad over the holidays. So she drove it all the way to Delaware.
That's awesome. That is so illegal. But that is so awesome.
No, it didn't happen, actually.
No, yeah. We're just yanking your cranks.
ATF.
But I want to go back to the Fat Lever. What does it have in it?
That's, come on, Matt. Gin. This is another sort of Collins variation. Actually, it's very much a Tom Collins with some Campari in it.
Yeah.
But instead of sweetener being your simple syrup, we use maple syrup.
Right.
And just because the bitterness of Campari really was coming out heavy, so we were like, maybe a little denser syrup kind of thing would balance it out a little better. Lemon juice, gin, simple maple syrup, Campari, and
a soda.
Soda on top.
But was he, Lafayette, was he a Cajun? Was he where was he?
That one, I think the drink.
Yeah.
See, the Three Finger Brown, I would say, is one of the few cocktails that the name came before the drink.
Yeah.
I think we often come up with about a bunch of drinks that taste good that we're like, all right, so now let's name these suckers. Okay, how do you do this? I don't know.
I will say, just on the spot here, that Campari, maple syrup, and gin are three extremely complex ingredients. And as we all know, Fat Lever was a triple threat, almost averaging a triple-double for a few years.
That is true.
Mostly with the Nuggets, but also with the Mavs.
Yeah, he could do it all. That's true. Gin, maybe associated with summer. Maple syrup, maybe associated with fall. Campari, I guess,
every
coming
day.
Back summer. Yeah, Campari every day, at least in our bar, at least.
Yeah.
And so he you know, points, assists, rebounds right there.
He's like a 6'5 guard. He averages like 8 rebounds a game.
Amazing.
It's ridiculous.
Point guard. He's not the shooting guard. He's
a point guard.
Mm-hmm. El Guapo.
Oh, I give that to Ari.
Three amigos.
Yeah.
Oh, really? See, I thought it was another sports reference. I always forget the guy's name. Rich Garces from the Red Sox.
The Red Sox.
Oh.
No, it was...
Yeah, that
it's,
too.
It's three amigos.
Which of the three is El Guapo?
He's the villain.
Oh, okay.
Jesus, you need to watch that movie.
I haven't seen it in ages.
Do you know what the plethora is?
I know the word, and...
Never
mind. Don't quiz me. I'm the host.
Yeah, good point.
So El Guapo has reposado tequila, cinnamon syrup, dashes of grapefruit bitters, peyote, so it has like a little Mexican flair.
Yeah, it's actually the cinnamon syrup's a little sweet, a little spicy, though balanced, kind of like El Guapo is the villain. He wasn't a lunatic. He was very nice to his fellow, his henchmen.
Yeah.
And he was, Mexican.
The improved...
Oh, yeah, that.
And that, too. The improved rye cocktail.
That's a classic, actually.
Yeah.
We wish that... We could come up with some other one. Yeah, that would have been perfect.
But have you ever thought of applying your own name to that cocktail?
Well, with a classic, you can't like put a Manhattan on the menu and be like and call it something else.
Yeah,
we would hope someone wouldn't put the Baron Harkonnen on their menu and then call it whatever they want,
like Paul Atreides or something. That just wouldn't work.
Yeah, sure.
Is that a Dune reference?
Yeah, again.
That's, yeah,
he's a hero.
I went blank for a second. My favorite, the Ray Finkel and or the Lois Einhorn. Tell me about it.
Well, that actually, that we were inspired by another bar, not necessarily for the name, but for the idea, because it's a drink where the modifiers are the same in the two drinks, green chartreuse, honey syrup, and orange bitters. But the base, you can do, you have a choice of two, applejack or, apple brandy or bourbon, which we, so that idea, I think we stole from Death & Company, because they had a couple of drinks where you could choose like your base and you had like five different choices and then the modifiers are the same. It was really interesting. And then we were like, well, how can we make a joke of this in the name? And so, yeah, we thought it would be really great to see people tableside quoting the Ace Ventura line where they're like, Finkel Einhorn, Einhorn Finkel.
How often does that happen?
Finkel is Einhorn. You know,
exactly. Could we put them together in one drink?
Do you have people like totally doing instant replays at the table?
Yeah,
we wish.
Yeah.
Well, but not as much.
Usually you don't, most of the table doesn't get that one. And yeah. So there's always one person at the table just like in alarm, trying, like tearing their hair out, telling them that they can't believe they don't know what it is, and then like describing it to them.
Yeah.
Although I did get a hug from a guy once who was like, thank you so much for awesome. That Ace Ventura reference. This has been a joke with me and my brother since we were young. Like, I am so happy that you have this on your
exactly.
menu.
Right. Exactly. Does anybody ever like give somebody a hug who named their drink, you know, like,
sure.
You know, like the proper Collins variation? No, you get the hug with the Finkel Einhorn.
That's right. That's right.
That's a great, if you ever have to put an advertisement, come get a hug for the Finkel Einhorn.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's good.
I kind of want to put my two cents in. I think I've many a times come to the bar and talk to you guys and Jeremy of athletes that I think should be on the menu.
Yeah.
And the one glaring omission is Razor Shines.
Third base coach for the Mets last year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but has like the epic 1986 Topps card when he was with the Expos. That was like the most sought after baseball card that year.
Can I step on your pride here a little bit?
Please,
because
yeah.
while that's a great name and a great reference, there is the ultimate, we were just talking about it on the way here, there is the ultimate baseball cocktail name connected to a baseball card as well.
Yeah.
Which is from, it's either a 1980 or 1981 Topps card. Kansas City Royals, the gentleman, he's got like, you know, a classically long 70s hair, and he's wearing a batting helmet without the ear flaps, and he's got one hand against the batting cage raised above his head, and he's leaning on it and just staring out at the camera.
It's a bit of a model pose.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like something you'd see in a magazine.
Exactly. And his name is Pete LeCocq.
Ooh, that's nice.
The perfect cocktail name.
Have you actually come up with the drink? You obviously have
no, but it's in it's in the
that one's in the works.
Yeah,
yeah. When you come, that's true. Like a lot of times, the names come to us, and you're like, "Oh, I got to write that down. I got to remember that."
Yeah.
And then you know, you create a drink, and you're like, "Wait, could this be the Pete LeCocq?"
Yeah.
Does this feel like a Pete LeCocq?
This feels a little more fat lever to me. I'm going to go with that instead.
But Razor Shines is great. That is
it's
a classic.
I'll be expect. And also another Met. I think he's coaching in the system this year, and he barely played, Mackie Sasser.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
The little stutters going back to the pitcher.
He had this, and also there's the Tim Tuffle. We, you know, he did the shuffle.
The Tuffle show. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. That sounds like one of your famous pink drinks should be named the Tim Tuffle.
I'm using this show also to maybe troubleshoot why, no matter what I do, even if it doesn't have the color or flavor profile, drinks that I make come out pink and taste like Good and Plenty's.
It's not a bad thing.
No, but it's
good
also...
Good and Plenty's taste good.
Do you put absinthe in every drink?
No, dude, I could even shake water and it would come out looking like, you know, pink, fruited up and taste like a Good and Plenty.
We have a similar situation that our namesake, we have a cocktail that we call the Jakewalk that was actually created for us, but it has Peychaud's bitters in it, which is red. So we get a lot of dudes that are like, oh, man. Rum, tequila, lime, hit me with it. And you're like, there's your pink drink, sir.
Tastes like grapefruit, right, sweetie.
Yeah, exactly. Enjoy. You know, just the color, you know, yes, it's part of it, but I don't know. It's not something to stress about.
So, I mean, talking about being a novice mixer, bar guy, I don't know what the word is, shaker, stir, what would you say is a good introductory drink for someone, one, to start, you know, learning about cocktails, and to start making for themselves?
The classics. Just make a make an old fat, or learn how to properly make an old fashioned and a Manhattan and a martini and maybe like a margarita, or sour.
Yeah,
and think you're fine. Like if you learn how to make those really well balanced and understand why you've made them really well balanced, I think you can sort of branch off and.
I mean, I don't want to jump on a seasoned veteran of the radio like R.A. Form.
No,
but
please,
you get a book. Get a book that has the classics in it.
Yeah,
right.
From
exactly.
a reputable source. We suggest to everyone before they even step behind a bar to grab The Joy of Mixology by Gary Regan, which is for me the Bible of bartending.
Exactly. Yeah.
For us especially because he has a certain what's the word? Something he doesn't take it as seriously as all the other guys. You know, like there is. Great sources of information like an Imbibe from Dave Wandrich and some of those things where you're going to get an exhaustive source of things. Enjoy Mixology. He really talks about bartending and mixing drinks and how that affects your.
And it's fun. You know, the whole thing is fun.
Yeah, and he it seems like he's trying to have fun. So that's a great book as a source. Some of his recipes, there's debate about how they are. But I would say my first drink that I learned that sort of changed my feeling about how cocktails. Should be, or you know,
from the man with the claw.
Maybe no, that's not true. This is well after I unlearned. I went to a cheap bartending school in Ohio at one point, and the guy had like a claw hand, which is always great. Like, yeah, I learned this. I learned how to make these drinks one handed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, with
say,
sour mix.
I can only make that for you with a claw. Hold
yeah,
on a second.
Like,
give me 20. I'll be right back.
I got to put a glove on.
Yeah.
No, the first drink, like in New York, where someone is like, "No, man, that's how you just make it, and it's awesome." Sazerac.
Yeah.
If you can make an old fashioned, you can probably make a Sazerac. I don't know. It just changed my whole world as far as the way I think about cocktails and how cocktails should be. Especially, I think people our age always are, as guys in our 30s, are raised like you were mixing things with sour mix, mixing things in.
No, I just went straight sour mix.
Well, yeah. Or not mixing them with sour mix. And so you have to, there's a little bit of unlearning as you get to New York and you're in the whole. Classic cocktail scene a little bit more. And so for me, that was the first classic cocktail. I was like, holy shit, everybody could make this and it's amazing. You know, it really does.
No, that's a really good one actually, because it has a little bit more complexity.
Right.
To it, on the palate. So you really get your bang for the buck.
And right just for those that don't know, will you guys tell us what a Sazerac is and how to make it?
Sure. Well, actually, Ari, didn't you guys do a test the other week?
We did.
We had like a sort of standardized formula that everybody uses, and then we sort of went through it, and we're like, okay, let's actually drink 10 Sazeracs and see which one we like the best in our recipe, and I don't know what you guys landed on exactly.
We did, and I guess I'll just get like, should I get really specific with the ingredient?
Oh, yeah.
All right,
yeah.
So we did 2 ounces Rittenhouse rye, a scant... half ounce of simple syrup, which is just under, like scant is just under a half ounce. 3 dashes Peychaud bitters, 1 dash Angostura bitters, which you get together in a mixing glass, get your ice in there, give it a stir, and then you have your chilled cocktail glass, which you rinse with absinthe. And we used Vaux Pontarlier absinthe. And while any absinthe is going to work with the rinse, if just with ingredients we're using, it will still vary very, very, very slightly, but just to know which one we used. Rinse the glass and make sure it's rinsed so you don't have like even a small like half of a teaspoon left inside. It's just really just rinse the entire glass and then strain the stirred ingredients over and a lemon twist. And it was delicious.
By the way, there's a lot of debate about what type of cocktail glass is proper for a Sazerac. This is where things get kind of screwed up, in my opinion. But generally, if you have a rocks glass at home and you're trying to make Sazeracs, that would do just fine.
Yeah, but chill it.
Yeah.
Right. So and don't put it on ice.
Right, exactly.
You get those absinthe, like, pretty, you know, good and plenty smells coming out of it.
Yeah.
And it helps to, you know, just have a glass that has some space above the top of the liquor.
But as you listeners have heard, you can make your cocktail and have fun, too.
Yes.
Fantastic. Thank you guys for being on the show.
Thanks for having us, man.
Yeah,
you know, stop in. have a Sazerac, learn how to make a Sazerac, or ask for the Pete LeCocq. Coming soon.
You might get something gross.
Matt and Ari from the J-Quack. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Thanks for listening. Hearst Ranch for sponsoring. Jack Inslee for producing. Hope to have you back here Tuesday, 3 p.m. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. The Snacky Tunes compilation has arrived and is available for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com. This compilation features live performances from some of the hottest acts around today, including Midnight Magic, Surfer Blood, Oberhofer, and more. Again, you can download this compilation for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com, and make sure to listen to Snacky Tunes every Monday at 2 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network. The following is a public service announcement from the Museum of Food and Drink. Dave Arnold and Patrick Martins have gathered a team of New York's most innovative chefs and bartenders to create a 9-course fundraiser lunch at Del Posto, Sunday, March 27th. Their intent? To kickstart the greatest food museum in the world. The menu for this unprecedented event is derived from educational themes of the museum. Chefs will draw inspiration from sources outside their normal sphere. How will a cutting-edge chef handle the Paleolithic, or a dish only using pre-Columbian ingredients? What will a modern Italian chef do with ancient Rome? The chefs include David Chang of Momofuku, Wiley Dufresne of WD-50, Mark Ladner of Del Posto, Nils Noren of the French Culinary Institute, Cesare Casella of Salumeria Rossi, Carlo Maracci of Roberta's, Brooks Headley of Del Posto, and Christina Tozzi of Momofuku Milk Bar. Bartenders include Audrey Sanders of Pegu Club, Thomas Waugh of Death & Company, Simon Ford of Pernod Ricard, Damon Bolte of Prime Meats, and Eben Clem of BR Guest Restaurants. Proceeds from the event will directly support the Museum of Food and Drink. Tickets are very limited and $250 per person. To purchase tickets, please visit mofad.eventbrite.com. That's mofad.eventbrite.com. Once again, mofad.eventbrite.com. Sponsored by Pernod Ricard, Heritage Foods USA, Pat LaFrieda Meats, Barterhouse Wines, Del Posto Restaurant. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Foods USA. In late March, Dan, Andrea, Patrick, and the Heritage team are traveling to the coldest reaches of the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont to help the Cantor family tap sugar maple trees. Then the maple sap will flow down to the sugar house where it is boiled gently over a wood fire just as it has been for generations. Just a few days later, this grade A amber syrup will be poured into the beautiful glass jugs and sent to you for pancakes, waffles, desserts, glazing hams, or just drinking by the spoonful. There's only a limited supply, so order today. Each 1-liter bottle is $45, including delivery. Delivery will be at the end of March, and we will notify you of the exact shipping date. Each shipment will include a CD explaining the whole process. You can also follow us on YouTube while we work and bottle. In the meantime, you can head over to the Heritage Radio Network archives and listen to Linda Palacio talk about maple syrup on her show, A Taste of the Past, Episode 12. For more information, visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com.